Good morning, everybody.
Greetings.
Probably before we dive in, and even before we introduce ourselves, I should point out a couple things. One, your screens are fine. My beard is a vague shade of teal. I try to bring back my old practice, and it didn't really go as dark a color as I want. Yeah. So it feels sad. I feel like a failed Muppet. The other thing we should probably bring out is this is our we're having a hiatus after this week. We're taking a break. I just don't know how to say hiatus in a way that
hiatus.
Yeah, it doesn't need to sometimes be like words, sometimes words Latin. Just don't sound right in my head. Anyways, we went on a hiatus after this week, probably for the entire month of July. We'll be back sometime in August.
The question is, will any of you be back?
Yeah.
We might be back, but you all might be gone.
The Earth might be gone.
The Earth could be.
It was 118 degrees in Siberia yesterday.
Yeah. So it turned out that our series on climate change last week was absolutely prophetic. Because yesterday, so above the Arctic Circle, right? Like that place where there's an ice ocean.
Where polar bears hang out.
Where polar bears hang out.
Where they're usually chilling.
You know, and there's the ground is frozen. It's so cold all the time. It's 118 degrees. 118 degrees. And then the other, there are heat records being set all throughout the Pacific Northwest. Seattle had the first 2 days in a row of 100 plus degree weather. And today it's going to be 3. This has never happened, right? Never happened.
It's a hoax. Governments trying to get power over to people more. I don't know what accent that is. It's just climate change is baking my brain. It's depressing, and it raises these questions. Like to me, what do we do? Like that's a big question that we ask all the time with all these problems in our world, and. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, like if you're a Jesus-y person, you know somehow part of the answer is supposed to be the church. Like we are the body of Christ in the world confronting the principalities and powers. But that's not really how things work out. Like it's amazing
to me.
While the earth is baking and there's rampant oppression and things. The big argument is like, can the Catholic bishops really keep Joe Biden from taking communion? Like, these are the, and it shows like there's kind of an out of stepness with the church, like controversies of the church while people are suffering and you have homeless queer youth, there's still denominations fighting over whether or not it's okay to be gay at all. Like, so there's this out of stepness and, you know, it's no surprise then that so many people are leaving the church because they feel like it's irrelevant. And people, whether you're conservative, liberal, radical, like you have different theories as to what the disappointment is for these different people. It's for evangelicals, it's because we've left the pure gospel. And so people know that they're getting dross, and so they leave. But if you're radical, it's because the church is a horrific part of oppression, and so that's why people are leaving. But there's all these basic questions. What is it supposed to be? What are we supposed to be going for with this church thing?
Yeah, so that's what we're going to explore. Mm-hmm. But I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Mark Tealbeard Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
Yes.
Tealbeard the Pirate is kind of a...
Tealbeard the Pirate.
Yeah. It's got a ring to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, so the, and so both Mark and I obviously have associations with this institution, this thing that's called the church. But you know, I'm in touch with lots of people that are pastors, various church professionals, and across different denominational bodies. And, you know, these institutions are just completely melting down. I mean, they're completely melting down. And it seems like almost every day it gets more extreme. So, you know, one of the things that's happening now, and it's really good, this issue is very much gaining steam, right, of these native boarding schools. And so they're finding these burial grounds of children in these schools that were run by the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And so there's now all these calls for basically Nuremberg-type trials for people who were involved in these schools and for the Catholic Church as a whole, and for reparations to be paid. Deb Haaland, who's the first Native Secretary of the Interior, announced yesterday that there's going to be a very thorough study and investigation of the American boarding school situations. Mm-hmm. Again, most of those schools run by church institutions of one kind or another, sponsored by the U.S. government, but often overseen by church denominations. You know, you have people being treated horribly. You know, one church professional I'm a regular touch with just said, you know, everybody's just gotten mean. Like, mm-hmm. you know, these denominations are splitting, fragmenting. People are leaving the ministry, large numbers of people, not just leaving the pews, but leaving their jobs in ministry. You know, there's many ways in which, of course, the American church, which is so steeped in racism and white supremacy and genocide and all these things, you know, there's many ways in which perhaps it's really good that this institution is dying, because it has really failed to address these issues and repent and reform. Mm-hmm. So then you've got all kinds of other things popping up, including something like transmission. We've heard people say this is like their church. You know, the Zoom classes that I've been doing, the different things that we've done, you know, people will say, well, this is kind of like my church now, you know? And so there's clearly something, some kind of communal impulse and practice that people use this term when it resonates in a positive way. But then you also have, you know, the institutional manifestation, which means a whole other set of things. And so it's worth taking a look at.
And people get into, like, to me, there's something profound about the way in which everyone projects all their stuff onto the idea of the church. Like, and what I mean is this, mm-hmm. people get anxious when their congregation is under threat in ways that become irrational. Like, and so people don't even ask, like, you can have churches arguing over stuff without ever pausing and asking, like, should we even exist? And what are we going for here? And it's funny, like, if you've ever been a part of a church's discernment process to, like, come up with a mission statement, which is one of the stupidest things in the world. It's like, yes, having clarity around that is good. But, like, you can 9 months trying to draft a statement that is really basically a lie, because it becomes an aspirational statement that's not based in reality. And meanwhile, like, it becomes clear to anyone who's on the peripheries of that church, who's not so invested and enmeshed, like, what that church is really all about. And it gets funny, like, mm-hmm. Being kind of a, even though I'm a professional Christian, I've usually been on the edges of institutions. And it's really hilarious how, you know, self-referential, like, the way churches talk about themselves as though they're this important thing, and it's usually delusional. It's intense. And then all of a sudden, because there's all this irrational anxiety, stuff floating around and people like using the church as kind of like a way for them to validate themselves. All that stuff is just lurking around. Then whenever there's stuff like carpet decisions become these huge symbolic battles and people have splits over crap like that. It's, and again, like we have to ask, like, what are we actually going for here? I mean, I've been in.
One example in that regard that I often bring up was the several hour long conversation about what kind of vacuum cleaner to buy at the Crookston Church.
What'd you go with?
Well, so this is the hilarious thing. So my logical thought was, let's ask some people that know about vacuum cleaners. And so, you fool, you. So these two women that were very knowledgeable about such things and happened to also do some volunteer work up at the hospital said, well, you know, the hospital gets these kind of industrial vacuum cleaners that last forever and they're really simple and they're great. We should get one of those. Well, they cost $400, but they last forever, right? The church, of course, did not want, that was way too much money to spend. And they wanted to go to the local hardware store and buy the crap $100 vacuum cleaner that, you know, breaks after a couple of months. And so, I mean, they had, I am not exaggerating. I mean, hours and hours over several months conversation about this. And finally, the decision at the end, this is the most hilarious thing, was that they would allow the church to buy the expensive vacuum cleaner, but they would only allocate $150 out of the normal church budget for it. So if I could find the other $300 from somewhere else, we could buy the expensive vacuum cleaner, which I managed to do. And I mean, 14 years later, that expensive vacuum cleaner was still running. So
vindicated,
but it was an unbelievably stupid. So, all right, we got a lot of comments coming in.
Good morning, everyone who's saying good morning. Yeah. Ellen says inadequate pastoral care and theological explanation for suffering is also a big one.
Yeah. For people leaving. Yeah,
for sure. There's a cruelty to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much moralizing that, you know, if you feel like you're struggling and feel like crap and need help, the last person you want to talk to is a pastor because they usually make you feel worse.
That's often the case.
Kathleen. Kathleen. All right, so I just finished my last Sunday at a certain church. The only concern they expressed about the next pastor was the hope that she would bring back the folded bulletins. I didn't think bulletins were necessary. No concern for reaching new people or helping anyone. Just can we have the pretty bulletins back?
I have also had that conversation. Can we have the pretty bulletins? Yeah, I mean, these are things that are, you know, when it's 118 degrees in Siberia, you know, the pretty bulletins are really important.
Well, they are, because otherwise, how can you do this? You know, it's hot.
Really. Kathleen, you're so radical. Getting rid of bulletins, that's pretty bold.
Ellen writes, the way even the most progressive churches ask people to give offering to God by giving money to the church while we don't have food at home versus the unsustainable living of ministry work needs to be figured out if the church is going to stick around.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
CK writes, one interesting thing about churches in the 55404, which is my zip code, it's part of South Minneapolis, is how so many of the buildings that used to be beautiful structures that had significant standing in the neighborhoods are now repurposed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the great sort of visual signs of the decline of this institution are the number of these buildings that are either empty, something new, or on the verge of out and out collapse. I mean, it's just the whole passing away of something. And, you know, and of course this has happened throughout the 2000 year history. And I think that's something that people really forget when they confuse these institutions with some sort of living entity. I mean, there are more church bodies and institutions that have died and disappeared than that currently exist. And so God doesn't seem to have any problem with these institutions coming and going. They serve their purpose and they disappear. And, you know, most of the people that have talked about this over history talk about the fact that they become corrupt, they become irrelevant, populations move, nation states and different territories move and change. You know, religions move and change, right? I mean, like Indonesia used to be a Buddhist country many, many years, centuries ago. There's even a Buddhist pyramid in Indonesia, which I've been to. It's pretty, pretty cool. But, you know, there's hardly any Buddhism in Indonesia anymore. And of course, a predominantly Muslim country. So this is also a very normal process. And I think that's something that, you know, again, when you're talking about this anxiety that people get into, people, because they don't have historical sensibility, don't realize like, oh, yeah, I mean, these institutions come in and go and happen all the time.
Mm-hmm. Ellen writes, church ladies in the kitchen being rude, bossy, and inhospitable are also a whole deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the church kitchen is like just the swamp of neurosis. And in fact, this was the other hilarious thing about the Crookston Church was that there was conversation about us joining with the local Methodist church. And basically, the negotiations fell apart over which dishes we would keep when we combined, you know, the Methodist dishes or the Presbyterian dishes. So,
one thing I used to experience at church that kind of went away because it was seen as passe, and now it's kind of coming back. Now they call them dinner churches, but was the potluck. I mean, which actually is my favorite memories of church. And there was always this lady, speaking of weird and angry ladies in the kitchen, every time there was a potluck, she'd bring a mincemeat pie. No one likes mincemeat pies, so she'd bring it. No one would eat any, and she'd bring it home. And I just, like, after years of this, I started realizing she just likes mincemeat pie, and this is the perfect scam of, like, making a pie for herself, but then seeming as though she's contributing. She's a genius, that lady. Ellen writes, people use strange situations to talk about other things that go over a new person's head, too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
This next one is the most important theological question of our day. What yes. vacuum cleaner can suck the sin out of our hearts? That's worth buying.
There we go.
I think yeah. it's a Dyson.
A Dyson, yeah.
Which is, Seymour writes, good morning. It's hilarious that a church would need a mission statement.
Like, that's what I've always said.
You'd think the mission would be pretty clear. And of course, it's not, practically speaking, and therein lies the issue.
Yeah, no, that's what I've always said about these mission statement activities within churches. Like, isn't it obvious what the mission is? I mean, but then you're right. I mean, practically speaking, I think that people have very little sense of this, especially within the parish church model, right? What is this about? Why are we members of this organization? Why are we going to these horrible committee meetings? Like, what is the point here? And I think that most people actually don't understand, or Mark, as you were alluding to before, most people are not honest about it, right? And You know, parish churches traditionally were marriage and burial societies, right? That basically you went there, you know, when you kind of needed some sort of spiritual something. And I think that for a lot of people, that's what they still are, you know. And I'll have people say, you know, in a dying church, like, I just want this open until my funeral, and then I don't care. Which at least is honest, right? I mean, they're just putting it right out there. No.
Yeah, it's there are these different paradigms, and like in a lot of times they're not that honest. Like to me, a lot of churches, mainline churches, tend to fall into that more of that care model. Like we exist for our members to have their goods, their real spiritual goods and services. And then conservative churches, particularly evangelical ones, like won't ever admit it, but they have a settler colonialism mentality. It's like we go into an area and have a beachhead, we reach out, but then it's a vessel for holding pure doctrine that you pour out on people, mm-hmm. and then you defend it. So this is where it becomes very the church militant. you start bringing up the question of like, well, the ethics of Jesus, which to me is more about what the church is about. Like it's a small community, generally speaking, that's trying to reorder our relationships with one another, ourselves, God, and the land. Like it's just trying to figure out how we relate differently, which is what we always talk about here. How do we change yeah. those relationships? And doctrine and things like that are supposed to aid in that. They're not the point. I mean, okay. Jesus is very clear, like when he's like, you know, at the point of this, the law and the prophet stuff is love God and love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, it's very clear. That's the mission statement. If you want to get technical, Jesus has a mission statement too about like the spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach good news to the poor and, you know, liberation to the oppressed. That's Jesus is very clear about what the point is. Yeah. But that's not really kind of what it seems about for most people. Gus writes, I find hope in the fact that there's at least three churches I have friends on staff with here in Portland that have gone out of their way to transform their property into affordable housing.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a movement that is picking up steam, which, yeah, is awesome. And it's something that a number of us have been talking about for quite a while, and it's really great that it's finally starting to get some traction as... Yeah, I mean, churches have all this property, not just buildings, but, you know, land, some of it pretty substantial. And so if they're not using it for this other thing that the church has been doing for a while, affordable housing, community space. There's one church outside of Washington, D.C. that did this in a big way, because they had, I think, like, 14 acres or something of land, and so they did this massive thing, and they built all of the housing and community space and retail space around the church building, mm-hmm. and so it was a very cool design, so that the church is still functioning, and you know, maybe they'll get more members, maybe they won't, but they don't really care. Yeah, that's a great repurposing.
And a sad anecdote, probably a month ago, I had a local pastor reach out to me for advice and to vent. And their church building, like by the dumpsters in the lawn, there was someone who experiencing homelessness who had set up camp there. And so they had all these meetings about how to get rid of it. And so they were going to call the cops. But this one pastor on staff, who's a friend of mine, was like, just blocking that. And this is really what the church is trying to figure out, is how do we get rid of this homeless person? And so I told him, like, you know, you're totally in the right, you should fight for this, because like if your church can't figure out how to speak good news to this guy and allow this person to remind you as a church what your purpose is, then you don't have a right to exist. And so I have to follow up what happened, but like that is like a perfect example of how effed up things are.
Liability, yeah, and that happens all the time.
That is totally a common thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Barnum studies say young people strongly desire a place to practice religious beliefs, but church just isn't the place.
Right. Yeah, and so this brings up, you know, one of the things that that we've heard a lot from churchy people over the last several decades is, oh, you know, the church is dying because society is becoming secular and all these people are becoming evil atheists. Which, you know, in fact, is absolutely not true. What is happening is that people are no longer willing to attend this dead, boring institution that doesn't meet any of their spiritual needs. And so, you know, and the church people can't handle that, and they don't want to listen to what it is that people want. And so, you know, they just act out and blame them. It's kind of like boomers blaming millennials for destroying TGI Fridays or something. I mean, my experience of doing the work that I've done over the number of decades is that young people are incredibly interested in spirituality and spiritual practice and spiritual engagement and asking deep questions about their lives. But rolling out of bed at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning and sitting, staring at the back of somebody's head for an hour and being lectured at and hearing a lot of mediocre music, is just not, it's not where it's at. So they're not going to do it, right? There isn't that ethic of obligation, right? That people who are 80, you know, grew up with, where you just did what you were told, whether you liked it or not, or whether it was good or not. And so, yeah, so they're not going to go, but they're very interested in spirituality.
For sure. And not even just like light ephemeral spirituality. Like people get really into different stuff. Like, you know, look, it's totally like normal in South Minneapolis for people who maybe grew up in church and they don't go anymore to be really into some form of like witchcraft or spellcraft kind of stuff, really into the horoscopes and going on doing rituals and stuff like that. And, you know, like conservatives could be like, ah, it's because they, because of their sinful waywardness or some shit. But it's like, no, that shows a really intensity of commitment. It just doesn't fit. Like, there's all sorts of assumptions. Why does spiritual practice, why does church or religion have to be this weekly education hour with crappy singing? Like, that's what you just brought up. Like, all the other stuff is kind of seen as maybe supplemental at best. So, like, when the pandemic hits, churches start thinking, like, how do we make sure we have sermons every week? Is number one thing they thought about.
Yep.
And I remember early on, there was a woman, I think in one of our transmissions, who commented that while they're figuring that out, she didn't know how to get groceries and she would ask people in church to help her with it. And they just weren't like helping her figure out how to get her groceries, but they sure were.
But she could watch worship online.
Yeah. At her convenience.
All right. We got a lot of comments now, which is awesome.
Seymour says the horrors of boarding schools have never been a secret. So it's almost insulting to have people now be so shocked. I'm glad they're talking about accountability, but we are just so behind, aren't we? For sure.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And yeah.
Meanwhile, thousands of children are going missing from concentration camps as we speak. It's not a great leap of logic to say that there are more of these mass graves on the way. Seymour also says, when I say practically speaking, I guess I mean that in reality, it's not obvious to church people. And that's the problem for sure.
Yeah. About the mission. Yep. Well, and so, you know, one of the things that I always like to point out in these kinds of conversations, right, is that the church as an institutional karmic flow has really had two aspects to it. Right. And so one is what we call the parish church, which are these places where you come to once a week or once a year you're a member of, or you're a member by virtue of being baptized. And then the other is the contemplative community stream. And, you know, these two streams really have always approached this church thing very differently, right? And one basically says, okay, this is a quasi-volunteer organization. You can come whenever you want. You don't really have to change your regular life at all. You just have to give some money and help out every once in a while and show up. The other one says, no, you really have to completely change your life. And then out of that, this community is going to do something different. And so, you know, those are two very different things that we need to look at. And, you know, the local church as a volunteer organization that doesn't require anything of anybody, it really, we shouldn't be surprised that it's totally ineffective. I mean, we just shouldn't be surprised at that. And I think that it's part of our own collective denial, our being the people who are involved in church, part of our own collective denial that we are surprised that it's so anemic and ineffective. Because if it's just another thing that I do in my busy American life, then it's just going to be not much.
Kathleen says, I think it's hilarious that all the churches have signs saying everyone's welcome when that is clearly not true. Yeah. I remember, it reminds me, and I use this example all the time, but we had this Marxist guy, this leftist guy who would come to our, when we had church services with the Mennonite Worker, and he stopped coming. And then he told me, like, because it felt too much like a flop house. I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, there's just too many like smelly homeless people around when you worship. So, like, and that just takes me out of the worship experience, he said. And I'm like, what do you think the church is for? Like, you're literally telling me as a Marxist Christian that you don't want to be at a church that's shabby and filled with homeless people. And he still just like thought it was completely rational to have that view. I'm like, well, then you're in the wrong game with the Marxism and the Christianity thing, I guess. Seymour says, how do we get rid of this homeless person? I mean, it's not in our mission statement or protocols.
Yeah.
Gus writes, all three of those churches are still thriving. Adding affordable housing actually has helped the church grow. Go figure. Not being shitty seems to appeal to people and join in on that action.
Yeah.
OMG, are millennials killing the church?
Yes, it's your fault.
They lack commitment. That's the right. Thing is, that unlike us boomers, those young people lack commitment. Meanwhile, they keep shutting down the interstates and getting arrested because of their lack of commitment. James writes, I talked in church yesterday about how Jesus had a reputation as healer and how the church doesn't have a reputation for healing people, but how we sure hurt a lot.
Yeah, James, I talk about this all the time. I mean, to me, if any, you know, when people say, like, well, what's our mission statement? What should we do? And I'm like, well, why doesn't every church have a clinic in it? I mean, the one obvious thing that Jesus did from a materialistic point of view is to heal people. You know, and churches are empty, church buildings are empty 90% of the time. And yet they guard that space with, you know, fascistic like rigor. And I'm like, why don't you open it up and have a healing clinic? But yeah, I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Haley writes, Christians say all kinds of things like everyone welcome. And it just makes me want to interrogate them and ask, what does that even mean? Please just explain to me what you think that means. Because I find that most of the time they're just repeating good Christian words, phrases, and they don't even know what they're saying. Yes, churches are filled with thoughtless cliches.
Yeah. Well, or I think that they are very clear about what it means. And what it means is that everyone is welcome to come and be exactly like us. And if you come and be exactly like us, then you are welcome.
Yeah.
And they don't think that there's a problem with that idea. Which is where we get, you know, circling back to the roots of American Christianity and imperialism, because that's an imperial thought. Like, if you obey the empire, then you're welcome to be part of the empire. And if you don't, we'll kill you.
Angelic writes, welcome to the pews, but not given seats at the table. Yes, like, that's the other thing, is all are welcome to come and sit there. But if you disrupt anybody at all, you're out. Especially if you want something, or you want us to do something. CK writes, used closed down bars, have karaoke, drink, get drunk, talk about God. That's what the kids want. You know what? I've thought about karaoke church many times. It's still in my imagination. In a way, karaoke is like church to me. Seymour writes, the problem, of course, is that the church, out of its own desire for power, says it's the only place to commune with God. That then makes it the least likely place to achieve that. For sure.
Yeah, and I think this is something we could really kick off on Wednesday, is talking about the issue of power, because I think that's, you know, you've hit on one of the key issues there.
I mean, this is where it gets to that self-referential nature of and self-deceived way of being. Like, so the only place to commune with God idea, like we're at somehow the temple of the living God. And so what you end up doing is these churches make statements about how they are different from society ontologically, like just by existing without having to do anything. So all the churches that say that church is a counterculture, meanwhile, they... like, they're not even figuring out how to share resources with each other, right? Like, so it's like, no. Oh, if you're a counterculture, then show it. Like, sure. How is listening to a challenging message?
Countercultural.
Yeah, that's just, okay. That's nothing. I can watch a documentary that challenges me anytime I want.
That was a very stirring sermon, Pastor.
Good things. I'm going to be thinking about that all week. Charles writes, welcome to come and be proselytized.
Right.
Many evangelicals are so scared and suspicious of the word contemplation. I'm not surprised, and yet I also can't believe it. Like, what in the world?
That'd be a good one to talk about. Yeah.
If you're just sitting there being silent and emptying your thoughts, then it just allows there to be more space for the devil to come in.
Exactly. It's so logical.
Ellen writes, you guys should do a special episode where people can submit memes ahead of time. You can review. I have so many. Yeah, that would have been good.
Well, you can do that. That's why we have a topic for the whole week. Send us your memes and we'll throw some of them up there.
Let's do it. Bring them. Seymour says, this church is too aligned with Jesus' mission statement for me.
Yeah.
Gus writes, lol, y'all are just saying, could the church be more like the Black Panthers? If only. I mean, why not?
Yeah, why not? Right? Little education, feeding poor people, and following cops around in convertibles full of guns.
Yeah, fomenting revolution. Getting on the FBI list.
There you have it.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, if your church doesn't have... it isn't like attracting the attention of the FBI. Is it really a church? we missed one here. Seymour, lol, they're emblematic of the culture that they say they're counter to. Shake my head. CK writes, I love seeing the rainbow flags at all the churches. Yeah.
A little sarcastic there.
Well, sometimes, back when it was challenging, yeah, I could go off on that, but we're running out of time.
All right, we got to wrap up.
I have actually heard that nonsense. Is there a origin teacher that started the whole emptying your thoughts is evil nonsense? I don't know who started that. I mean, that's just kind of like a weird misunderstanding of what contemplation is.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then last comment, Gus writes, I'm here for it. All right. Church of St. Fred Hampton. Newton.
All right.
Church of God. Yeah.
All right. Great to talk to you all.
See y'all later in the week.
Great comments, and we'll see you next on Wednesday.
Yep. See you.
Bye.